Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from the New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week we're going to be talking about the new series of Black Mirror and E4 comedy drama Crazy Head. Anna has also watched the 2011 rom-com Crazy Stupid Love for the first time, so she'll be telling us how that went.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Last week we were chatting about The Divine Comedy, one of Caroline's childhood and adulthood favourite bands. Caroline, you went and saw them again this week, right?
I did. I saw them on Friday night at the Quarter House in Folkestone, which was totally amazing because I went with some of my friends from school, some of whom have now started listening to the podcast, as I mentioned them last week. They excited about that. Yeah, it was a really great gig, much smaller venue than the one I went to the previous week, and it was standing rather than seated, so there's a lot more dancing and jumping up and down. I can highly recommend, by the way, if you are having some kind of reunion with people you went to school with or from your earlier years, put the Divine Comedy song I Like on and then jump up and down around one particular person. It's a great night out.
Oh, that's really cute. Cool.
So the first thing we're going to talk about this week is the third series of Black Mirror, which landed on Netflix on the 21st of October. As with the previous series on Channel 4, Charlie Brooker's sci-fi anthology show focuses on human interaction with technology and the internet and the dark consequences thereof.
In this world, we're all so caught up in our own heads. It's easy to lose sight of what's real.
You said you don't know how much time there is. What does that mean?
It's important that you realize there is a small medical procedure involved.
Sorry for a game?
I didn't expect to find myself living in the future, but here I fucking well am.
I think with Black Mirror, I get the sense that public opinion has sort of changed on Black Mirror over the years.
Do you
I might
think
so? Be in the minority. I feel like when the first series came out, everyone was like, oh my God, Charlie Brooker, what a dark horse. He's written this amazing series. It's so prescient. It's so knowing. It's so dark. And everyone really loved it. And then the second series came out and it was sort of more of the same, which I think a lot of people liked. It started to roll out into the States. That's maybe when it started to get a bit, people started to feel like it was veering towards a bit of self-parody. And
yeah.
Mallory Ortberg at The Toast wrote this really great Up Next on Black Mirror parody piece.
That was very funny.
That is really, really funny, that says things like episode 12, what if phones, but too much?
Yes, exactly. Also, I can't remember the details of it, but wasn't there one episode in series 2 where the answer was basically like porn, but in a battery farm?
Yeah, it was like exercise bike. You live on an exercise bike and then your only way of getting off the exercise bike and living a different life is if you become like a famous singer or a famous porn star.
That was it, yeah.
So it was like the X factor of porn, basically.
And I feel like whilst, you know, that's not a terrible premise for a TV show, that for me, that was the point at which people on Twitter really started going to town on it.
Yeah.
To make fun of it, I mean.
There's only so many times you can lean back in your chair and be like, well, I guess the real monster was society all along.
Yeah, exactly.
Before you're like, okay, I get it, Black Mirror, I got it, we're all horrible. But so what did you think of the latest series? Because I remember I was really disappointed with the Christmas special when that came on.
That
I just thought that was awful.
Naff. It was naff.
Really naff. Despite the presence of Jon Hamm.
We watched the first and last episodes of the new series, right? Mm-hmm. So the first one is called
Nosedive.
Yes, Nosedive, that's right. And the last one is called Hated in the Nation.
Yeah.
And we chose to pick those two for Seriously because of a tweet by our colleague. Basically, our colleague Helen Lewis basically saying, the first episode is not great and then the last one is amazing.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of line you can draw between them. And I think she's right, to be honest. Although I did also find Nosedive really interesting.
Yeah, I think my feeling with this series is that I like Black Mirror when it's discussing technology, but also using that as a way to tell a story about actual characters.
Definitely, yeah.
I was talking to a colleague about this the other day. That's the main difference between these two episodes. So we've got one that is like, what if everyone rated you in every interaction? What would that mean for your life? And that is the whole thesis of the episode. And it doesn't really explore much in terms of people's personal relationships outside of that, really. Whereas the final one is a detective story. And it's a fun detective story, and you get a little sense of the personalities of the detectives and they're trying to solve a crime.
And Charlie Brooke has also said that the last episode was very influenced by the kind of Scandi crime dramas like Borgen and The Killing and stuff.
Yeah, and I like that.
I like that, and I liked it basically wherever you could see him importing from other genres to make the stories better.
Mm-hmm. I like it when it goes beyond just like this premise of technology.
Yes, exactly. Exactly what Mallory Ortberg was taking off, basically, when it stops just being like a glib, clever idea and becomes a good human story.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another one that I've watched in the middle, which is this one where there's some sort of shady organisation that figures out how to film people or get access to their laptops. And as a result, like, just blackmails them into doing random shit. And it never goes beyond the premise. It's literally just it's so unsatisfying in that sense.
I also found with Nosedive, which the premise of which, and spoilers from here on in, is a kind of Instagram type world of like pastels and lifestyle blogs and stuff.
Yeah, it's aesthetically very well done. I think it's quite pleasing, but also a bit eerie.
And the point, the structure of society in this episode is that everyone is constantly being rated by each other. And your rating determines your access to everything from like what you're allowed to do to where you live and all this kind of stuff. So one of the difficulties I had in taking this episode seriously is that it is exactly the same storyline as an episode from series 5 of Community, apart from in Community it's massively played for laughs.
Yeah.
So in that episode of Community, the community college where the sitcom is set is, for money, the dean offers up the student body as the test subjects for a new app called Meow Meow Beans, which, with a Z, which is basically what this Black Mirror episode is about, i.e. everyone rates everyone's interactions out of 5 all the time, and it gives you an aggregate score of Meow Meow Beans, and very, very quickly, the entire college stratifies into, like, 1s to 5s, 5s being the best.
Yeah.
But because it's Community and it's like surreal and absurd and a strange sitcom, like the 5s all start dressing in like white togas and only frequenting certain parts of the school, and the 1s become like savages with spears and face paint and all this kind of stuff.
This sounds like literally like the plot of Nosedive, but better.
Yeah. So that's one of the problems I had in trying to appreciate Nosedive as a piece of serious drama, because I was like, this has already been done better and also funny.
But yeah, I agree. It's a bit like when that also all these news stories breaking about this app called People that was basically where you rated other people, and everyone immediately was like, oh, this is gross, don't want it. People showed no interest in that app or being on it, and I think it's a little bit disingenuous. The premise behind it is the idea that we're all like desperate to be part of that rating system, and I think the vast majority of people think that sounds awful and terrible and would never want to do it. So I think it can be a little bit disingenuous to be like, see where society is headed, when you're a bit like, actually, no, it's not headed that way at all.
Yeah, I think that's true. So maybe on top of preferring Black Mirror when it focuses on genuine human stories, is when the humans are affected by technology that you want, that you can actually see realistically. Yeah, so I do use my phone all the time like that.
When the government might be spying on you.
Yeah.
Because we know that the government is spying on us. We already know that that's happening. So that is quite scary. But the idea that, like, your selfies are going to bring you down becomes a bit like, no, like, we're all intelligent people. We can both take a selfie or put a picture of our shitty breakfast on Instagram and, like, find that weirdly satisfying as a thing to do, and also be like, but I'm a smart person and I'm not going to consider my entire world for you to be based on this. Whereas when you're told that the government is spying on you, you're like, fuck, I can't do anything about that. And it's happening to me. So
yes. So our colleague Amelia wrote a really good piece about this, about the fact that like there's this piece of legislation going through the House of Lords at the moment, the Investigatory Powers Bill, which is basically something out of an episode of Black Mirror, mm-hmm. and no one cares.
Mm-hmm. We're already living it. There is a line in that final episode that we watched where the main detective goes, okay, the government's a cunt. We knew that already. You're like, yeah, we do, and we're still not doing anything about it.
So we should talk about that final episode, because yeah. I thought that was, for everything that Nosedive was not good, I thought Hated in the Nation was great.
Yeah, I had some issues with it. So the premise is there are these sort of celebrities who have analogies in the real celebrity world, like a journalist who's writing horrible pieces for some sort of tabloid about, you know, people on benefits. And so she's like the Katie Hopkins figure. There's a rapper who's saying controversial things on the telly all the time in a sort of Kanye West fashion. A hashtag starts where people can be like hashtag death to that celebrity. And whether by coincidence or not, some of these celebrities end up dead. Right. These detectives who are just originally investigating the death of one of these celebrities start to sort of realize that there's something larger going on. For me, I find it a little bit like, ooh, Twitter trolls, yeah. The greatest danger to society. And you're like, literally, this affects such a small percentage of the population. Why are we obsessed with this as like the terrible thing about technology? In that So You Think You've Been Publicly Shamed way, which was a book by John Ronson. This idea that like it's a real terrible facet of society, and like these social networks are bringing out all the like really horrible, disgusting, mean human impulses. I just sometimes can find it a little bit like people like Charlie Brooker probably are really like, yeah, this is so terrible. And you're like, what about the other things like, you know, revenge porn and cyberbullying and things that actually affect like a lot more people?
Even just like what can be the really sinister dynamics of a group chat,
yeah.
is much more something that everyday experience. I have to say, like, in my extremely limited experience of dealing with famous people because of our jobs, so like when we're getting them to write articles for the magazine, or when they like we invite them to appear at our events, there is a massive, massive inclination on their part to want to write or talk about people being mean to them on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it can be a little bit indulgent, yeah. basically. And I do think it's terrible, and obviously it's horrible. And when someone does something like that to me on the internet, from my very limited interaction with that kind of thing, it is like, oh, this feels horrible. But that doesn't mean that it's a huge problem for society, yeah, just because exactly. it feels horrible.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I just really liked that powerful plot and the mystery element of it. It felt like I was really pulled along with the story, which then made me more interested in the sort of technological arguments that it was trying to make.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I feel like there's been a bit of a debate in, say, the last 5 years or so around TV, novels, etc., about what is a good incorporation of technology. Like, there was this whole thing about, you know, why is it that in contemporary novels, like, no one ever talks about texting, even mm-hmm. though that's such a part of everyday life. It's because it somehow doesn't feel like literary yet.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel, you know. And I feel like we're only going to get to a place where we're like happy including our quotidian technology in our cultural output when we do it in service of other things. Mm-hmm. Whenever it's done as like a novelty or to show off or to show how modern you are, the reader or the viewer can tell that, and it makes it rubbish.
Yeah, I agree. I think Black Mirror is quite good at even just visually incorporating those sort of technological things into the texture of the world that it's in, because it's normally literally just a case of they film someone on their phone.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's so simple, and people are always trying to do more complicated things, but it works just to see someone like looking panicked and then looking at their phone and reading the text message. And I think in Nosedive they did it really well in the way that they sort of, they couldn't just do that because they had to get this, they had to give you that idea that this stuff is constant and permeating yeah. your like visual field and stuff, but they did it in a way that was like quite subtle and not too overbearing by just using lots of different styles of device and occasionally showing you them seeing it through their eyes and stuff yeah. like that. And I thought that was really cool.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So the next thing we're going to talk about this week is Crazy Head, a new comedy drama series from E4 and Netflix. Blurring the lines between battling demons both metaphorical and literal, it follows two young women, Amy, played by Carla Theobald, and Raquel, played by Susan Wacoma, who have the ability to see humans who are possessed.
Do you want to tell me what happened?
I see people, their faces, like they're burning inside.
Hey. That's right. You better run!
The things you see them too.
What are they?
They're demons. People like us hunt down and shove poles up their asses.
Big pole. Right up the ass.
Yeah, so you recommended me this show because you'd seen it before me, and I didn't really know what to expect. Like, I didn't read anything about it. I just went straight in.
Oh, good.
And I think it's completely brilliant.
I really love it. It's so weird, isn't it? It's like one of those things where you're like, oh, I actually love this. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
So the opening scene is this very strange, farcical series of events, but I think it's really representative of the sort of tone of the show, and I think it's really well written and really funny, where you see this young woman basically being jumped on in a car park by these two very sinister looking people in horrible clown masks.
Yeah.
She gets put in the trunk of their car, they drive her away, they drag her out in some horrible location, and they're like tying her up on the floor. She's like screaming, it's horrible. And then she goes, Amy, isn't that my top? And she realizes that one of the people is her flatmate. Amy's replying, like talking about how, no, you gave it to me under the clown mask, has to take the clown mask off to keep speaking. Then it becomes apparent that they've kidnapped her because she's possessed and they're her friends and they're trying to help her. They're going to do an exorcism. They're like Googling how to do an exorcism on their phones. And like, it involves pissing on her. And the whole scene, the whole farcical scene ends with Amy crouched over her best friend, trying desperately to like summon some urine while this song by the Cascades in the background plays that's like all about, you know, the rushing of the waterfalls and the rain. And it's just so, so ridiculous and funny. And I think Susan Wacoma, especially, who's Raquel, just is such a great comic actress. And it just really brings some life into that scene.
I mean, there are several things that actually this show reminds me of. One is Witless. Do you remember that we talked about a while ago?
Yeah, definitely.
The sort of like slightly hapless woman buddy comedy in a sense. And then I don't know if we've ever actually talked about it on the podcast, but that BBC Three show that was on a few years ago, In the Flesh.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but when I was sort of researching this show, it seemed like a clear predecessor.
Yeah, so In the Flesh isn't really a comedy. It doesn't have that vein of humour in it at all. It was quite angsty and dramatic. But in terms of the supernatural element and the way it handles that, it was very similar, although it was like zombies, not demons.
But, yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's one of those strange things where you can compare it to other things, but really it's in the tone of it that is so individual that makes it sort of difficult to compare it to anything at the same time.
I think for me, tone-wise, the closest thing is actually Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I know you haven't seen.
No, never. Big hole in my pop culture history.
The thing that, you know, made Buffy such a massive hit and means that it's the kind of show that, like, gets studied in university departments now is because of the, like, fast-talking pop culture referencey dialogue that it had. There wasn't anything like that before Buffy. You know, so the kind of quick-witted repartee among teenagers in the face of supernatural disaster.
Yeah.
I very much see that having its origins in Buffy.
Aww.
Although this does have a flavour all of its own, like it's not derivative. It's just like that kind of set the pattern for how you do this, I think.
One thing that I like about it as well is that I feel like it manages to be both sort of edgy in its humour, not massively, but in there's like lots of references to like vaginas, pissing, whatever, all that kind of stuff. But it's always so like sweet-natured. Mm. It's like really, really innocent in a funny way as well. Like the comedy between Kel and her brother is this very sort of like good-natured style of humor where she'll like tease him for the name that he used to call their mum's vagina, and it's like so such a weird joke to make, but it's just so funny because it's quite recognizable and just familial and cute. So I loved that side of it where even when it's like prodding you and trying to be a little bit provocative, like there's a bit where she's literally poking Amy in that way, it's still got a kind heart to it, and I love that about it.
But there is an attempt to like treat with slightly darker issues as well, right? Because when Amy first realizes that she can like see demons rising in people, she thinks that she's having mental health issues, right? She doesn't, of course you wouldn't, she doesn't immediately think, oh right, I can see demons.
Yeah, so she's been on medication before for these, you know, what she's considered to be hallucinations. So she's going back and forth between a psychiatrist. Raquel, we realize, is also in therapy, and she has to go, you know, very regularly, else she'll be in trouble or she might be sectioned. And I think they're deliberately playing with that idea quite a lot because it's sort of hinted in the first episode, and I haven't seen any further, that the leader of this demonic conspiracy is basically Amy's psychotherapist. And obviously there's sort of a grim irony there, isn't it, that like a lot of people struggling from hallucinations and mental health issues might come to incorrect conclusions, like my psychotherapist is out to get me. And so they're obviously doing something on purpose there, but it is funny, and I think they treat it very well. They like handle it just on the right side, but it never becomes like horrible or mocking in its treatment of mental health ever.
No, not at all. And the fact that it shows our two heroes as, you know, women who've had mental health issues in the past who are having treatment for them at the same time as they're doing all these madcap heroic adventures, I think tells you always that like it's okay, you know, this is a safe space. We're not here to make fun of them.
Yeah, and they're quite deliberately blurring the boundaries. So it's not like they don't have mental health problems.
Yeah, exactly.
They just can see demons.
Yeah.
You're sort of just not really sure where it might begin or end, because Raquel is just a very unusual person, isn't she?
Yeah.
And so Amy, when she first meets her, immediately calls her like a weirdo and a freak and says it's no wonder that she's got no friends and she's isolated because she's just so strange. And I think the implication might be that she does have some sort of mental health issue going on completely separately. She can also see demons. So it is done very well in that way. And I'm excited to see where they go with it. Because I think for me, the best thing about it is the comedy. Because it actually did make me like laugh out loud at my desk.
Same.
I was watching it at work because I was previewing it for work. And I was literally just like, that opening scene especially, just like laughing out loud at my desk. I couldn't even hide it.
So last episode, I recommended that Anna watch Crazy Stupid Love, which is a 2011 romantic comedy starring Steve Carell, Julianne Moore, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. It revolves around the middle-aged dating life of Cal, played by Carell, as he tries to get over his separation from his wife Emily, who is played by Moore. So Anna, what did you think of this film?
I thought it was a very strange film. I love Steve Carell and I love Emma Stone, and they were both great in this. They're both really funny actors. Julianne Moore, I really like as well. So I was sort of like up for it from the beginning. The Cal plotline is the main one, and then you also get a little bit of this, like, Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling romance, which we were talking about because I saw them as romantic leads in La La Land recently. I thought their plotline was funny and cute, but Ryan Gosling's character is really annoying, and he has terrible clothes in it. Terrible clothes, like the suits and the waistcoats and, like, and her hair the whole time as well, to the extent where when I was watching it with my boyfriend, he was like, okay, I love your running commentaries, but if you're just gonna say ew his clothes and her hair the whole way through, I might have to, like, mute button you, because they were just, I couldn't get over it. I found it, like, bizarre, and I don't know if it's just 2011 is already a long time ago fashion wise.
I don't know, I feel like even by that standards, like, he's just not very well dressed, and it also is compounded by the fact that in the world of the film, he's, like, incredibly stylish because he helps Steve Carell, like, get all up to date and, you know, cool and dress nicely so he can meet new ladies.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a whole montage where they go shopping. And it's like, no, don't take advice from Ryan Gosling.
Look
what he's wearing. It's a shiny grey suit.
And the women love it. And he's, like, teaching him how to dress to get laid. And he's basically a bit of a pickup artist.
Yeah, he is. It does shade into that.
It doesn't match with everyone's, like, nice feminist Ryan Gosling.
Not at all.
Memes and dreams. It's good in that it's funny. But I was also, like, part of me was, like, screaming at the TV, like, no, he's ugly and he's wearing terrible clothes. And none of these women would like you because you've literally come over and been really aggressive and weird with them. Like, his tactics are, like, don't reveal any personal information about yourself, tell them that they're boring you, like, it's really, really, like, neggy and so that drove me a bit crazy. But I did ultimately like that it all culminates in a sort of cute rainy night scene.
Yeah,
so I liked that. I liked the farcical side of it. There's a great scene involving the culmination of most of the plot lines and revealing the threads between them, set in, like, the garden, and it becomes, like, a big group fist fight basically, and that's funny for me. The film probably should have ended there. There's a whole weird bit where they're, like, there's a kid's graduation day speech.
Oh, I forgot that.
That's
comes
really
after.
Like, sentimental and weird. And a 17-year-old girl commits the weird sex crime of giving nude photos of herself to a 13-year-old boy inexplicably, and you're like, ew, what? No. It just sort of descended into, like, a very strange mishmash of things, and I was like, what is going on here? But I had some laughs, enjoyed the love scenes, so it was okay as rom-coms go.
Yeah, I watched this film for the first time on a plane, and I've actually subsequently also watched it on a plane because
great plane,
because I feel like it's a great plane movie.
Yeah, I agree.
So if any listeners find themselves on a plane anytime soon and this movie is available, we highly recommend that you click on it.
Yeah. It's sadly not on Netflix.
Oh, is it not? I thought it was. Oh, sorry.
I thought it was too, but I certainly couldn't find it on Netflix when I was trying to find it.
So what are you going to recommend me for next week?
So for next week, I'm going to give you the slightly curveball option of The Heart of a Dog, which is a sort of art film from Laurie Anderson, who is, like, an avant-garde artist. She's a musician mainly, I'd say, but she's also done some, like, performance art, visual art films. And she is the widow of Lou Reed. So it's this very strange film that's sort of about, like, her childhood and her childhood dog. And she speaks about these memories to weird music. It's also visually set to all these random illustrations that I assume she's done. Yeah, it's very weird, but I love the music, and all the ones where she doesn't speak I listen to, like, on a loop while I'm working all the time. But when I watched it, like, made me cry. It was very emotional. So either watch it if you so desire, or you could, like, listen to the spoken word album which accompanies the film on your headphones when you're doing other things. So a slightly weird option, but one that I hope you'll enjoy.
Yeah, it sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you can't wait until next Tuesday to hear from us again, head to seriouslypod.com, where you'll find all of our back episodes, including our specials on Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends.
We're also available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod at them all.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
If you've really enjoyed this episode, episode, why not go to iTunes and give it a rating or review? It helps other people find the show. And don't forget, our Gilmore Girls event is on the 22nd of November. If you'd like to join the waiting list, you can go to seriouslypod.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.